This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Nobody who lived through the 80s in Australia could forget the name Anita Cobby. She was the young nurse who was abducted, brutally tortured, raped and murdered in the Blacktown area. Her case had the whole country reeling in shock. Gary Raymond was a detective sergeant at Blacktown Police Station and worked on the case. Now he wants to give back to homicide victims. He's involved in plans to build a world-first residential facility to support those left behind after a homicide, especially children. Gary Raymond joins me in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
I can't imagine the toll that this must have taken on you personally to work on this case. Is this something that you'll just never forget?
Yeah, memories stay. Our memories are tattooed chemically on our brains by our brain chemistry. But apart from that, firstly, there's the shock that something like this happened. And even as a seasoned detective, you go into disbelief and denial and anger as well that people could do this to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, follows after that, speaking to the family left behind after homicide is devastating to see their sorrow, their emptiness, and they're just, it's like being hit by an emotional freight train. There's the sensory stimuli of the crime scene, you know, the sight, sound, smells and touches of that, which very much impact. And finally, there's dealing with the offenders. When you eyeball those who have done such horrific things, it's really emotionally quite testing, but it
must be hugely confronting, yeah.
Look, it is, but we've got to remain professional and fairly stoic so that we can gather the evidence together and the interview needs to run nicely so that we can make a really good solid brief around that.
Yeah, take us back to that time. What was the community feeling around this case?
It was outrage and fear. I remember distinctly when the media came out and saying they'd found a young lady's body in a paddock up in Rean Road at Prospect. Okay, but there was a bit of disturbance there. But then as it came out after the autopsy report and some other investigations that she'd been abducted and brutally raped, tortured and, as we know, and murdered, then there was fear because they hadn't been yet arrested. And they didn't know who it was, where they were. And in our minds, in the community's minds, was this. Will they offend again?
Nobody's safe, yeah.
Mm.
And what was the process you had to go through to track down those five guys?
Well, firstly, we looked at some of the evidence that was already in the police station. Like, for example, someone said they heard screams and saw a young lady dragged into the back of a car. And then the car disappeared up the road. And so we got that and we sort of put things together. Then we hit the streets. We talked to the, you know, the street kids. We talked to the drug addicts, the drug dealers, the prostitutes, the security on hotels and clubs and tried to, you know, went down to the methadone clinic and we went to the jail and tried to elicit some intelligence. Some neighbours reported some odd behaviour at 3 a.m. about some blokes burning some clothes in an incinerator.
Mm.
So we linked that in. And so it's a puzzle.
Mm.
As a detective, you've got all these pieces, but you've got to fit them into the picture. And so, of course, we had forensic evidence, we had photographic, witness and circumstantial evidence all came together. And we went out and we arrested them one by one.
But arresting them and getting a conviction are not always the same things. Were you confident not only that they did it but that you could convict them?
Look, we were putting it together, but we had a major break where the main offender, John Travers, one of his relatives or / friends brought him some cigarettes down into the cells. We'd arrested him for a stolen car. And we suspected that he might have been involved, but he was in custody. He actually confessed to her alone down there whilst the visitation took place. They were separated, of course, that he'd done this.
Mm.
And so she was shattered. She was a broken woman and she came and saw us and our team got a warrant for a listening device and she went back down in the cells later on, and he confessed on tape under a Supreme Court warrant. And so we linked everything together, and when we interviewed the other offenders, they confessed what Travis had done. But, you know, the sad part was they all agreed that she died because they might be recognised. And after all that brutalisation, then Travis took her life, sadly.
Isn't that terrible? Mm. And yet, how wonderful that that woman came forward and did the right thing.
Mm.
What kind of relationship did you have with Anita's family at that time? You must have had incredible empathy for them.
Yeah, look, to see the anguish of Gary and Grace Lynch, or she was known as Peg, of course, well known in the community, both of them, and I just saw the emptiness and the anguish and just, again, this disbelief and denial, and although I saw no anger in them, what amazing people.
Mm.
After the funeral and after the court, people sort of say, well, that's over, but I started to visit them because it's after the crime that people go into a lot of depression, a lot of anxiety maybe. And I used to drop in for a cup of tea, and I was there one day with them both, and we're just generally talking, and I was a good listener. And Gary suddenly turned to me, he stared at me, and he grabbed my hands and squeezed them. And he said, "Gary," I said, "Yes, mate." And he said, "Something good has to come out of something so bad." And I said, "It'll happen." And so as we visited him, he and Peter Simpson, who's Ebony Simpson's dad, and others, many others, started the Homicide Victim Support Group, which is running very well for a large number of years now. And the second thing that's going to be good coming out of something so bad, we're going to construct a world-first refuge for those left behind after homicide, particularly children. And we're going to name it Grace's Place, after Anita Cobby's mum, Grace.
And where did the idea for this come from, Gary?
It came from the Homicide Victim Support Group because it came from police officers too. For example, I'd go to crime scenes, very sadly and regrettably, where the dad had killed his wife and there was children left behind, and we had a dilemma. What do we do with them at 3 o'clock in the morning? With Grace's Place, we'll be able to, after we get statements and speak to them, transport them to Grace's Place, and we'll have mental and medical professionals on call that will come in, because the early hours of that grief is really important to establish how they go the rest of their lives.
I can imagine that would be the case. I mean, now Anita Bobby's mother's passed away. Do you think this is something she would have really wanted?
Absolutely. Look, we watched her interact with children left behind after homicide, and she would leave the adults in the room and be directed to children. Her heart went out to them. She engaged with them in conversation, played little games with them to try and get them back into some normality. And so it was very fitting. Martha Jabor, who's head of the Homicide Victim Support Group, she was looking at a photo of Grace. And we'd already talked about the concept of the refuge, the residential, and she said, "I know, let's call it Grace's Place."
Mm. Yeah, that's beautiful, isn't it? So tell us a bit more about the fundraiser that you've got planned for Tuesday.
Yeah, Tuesday night the 19th, it's a big fundraiser for Anita Cobby's Grace's Place. And so we've got the Governor coming, Major General Hurley and his wife. We've got the Attorney General, Mark Speakman, coming. We've got the Police Minister coming, Tony Grant. We've got the Deputy Commissioner of Police, Dave Hudson, a heap of other people coming. And we're going to have a great celebration night and fundraise at the same time. And one of the guest speakers will be myself and Catherine Siska, who's Anita Cobby's sister. Bring your tissues with you.
Oh, it's amazing that she can do that. I don't know how she can do that. That's amazing.
Well, she sees the legacy. You know, something good is coming out of something so bad. And she says too that when she was a young lady, when Anita was murdered, there was nowhere for her to go to be,
to be supported.
Yeah, to be cared for. And we always say we don't help people because that says you're helpless. So we support people, which means that we stand alongside them while they do the grief journey.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, that sounds like an amazing evening, and I can't, as you said, bring the tissues if you're going to be hearing from Anita Cobby's sister. Where can people find out information about that event?
Yeah, look, they just ring the Blacktown Workers Club.
Okay.
We'd love to see them come along, and there's lots of great prizes, I'll tell you.
Yeah, excellent. All right, well, before we let you go, Gary, I mean, you're retired now. As you reflect back over this case, I imagine you must think about it from time to time, you know, and just and reflect over it and your involvement in it. What have you learnt from this process?
Firstly, I've learnt that there's a lot of good in people. We see a lot of, as police officers, a lot of bad people, but they're only a minority. And so we see a lot of good people. Secondly, dealing with murder and dealing with serious crimes like child sexual assault, pedophilia, all of those sort of things, really makes you see how low that humanity's got from that time in the Garden of Eden where the fall happened and sin came into the world and shattered it. And as a Christian cop, I used to do a lot of my investigations on my knees. Mm. I'd tuck my way somewhere and I'd just bow in prayer and say, Lord, this is your investigation. I'm handing this over to you. You show me where to go, what to do. And so I was able to then pray for witnesses, for victims of crime and offenders. The Lord led a number of offenders to himself through me after their arrest. And so as a Christian cop, I always do what I call a flick pass. And often, you know, when you go to the doctor, the GP, they'll say to you, not too sure what's wrong, I'm going to refer you to a specialist.
Hmm.
That's what I did. Whenever I was traumatised by the world, I'd say, hang on, Jesus, I didn't die on a cross for this. You did. So you're the aggrieved, not me. I'm handing this over to you and I want you to comfort me as you promised and give me that peace. And so I always imagined that Jesus was a detective partner with me and we're working on cases together and just his love for me and his forgiveness for the mistakes I make is just unbelievable, but believable.
That is powerful. Now, your stories, just quickly, are in three books, aren't they? Tell just quickly, what are those books and where can people get hold of them?
Yeah, look, a gentleman called David Nicholas, he's a retired minister. He said, I'd like to write about your life as a Christian cop. And they're called, there's three separate books, Top Cop, Top Cop 2, and Top Cop 3.
Wow.
And they're available at Coorong.
Great.
And the proceeds were raising money for suicide prevention. It's when I was in police rescue, I was a suicide crisis negotiator. And so I was talking people back from suicide and I've got a real heart to minister to people who are suicidal.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. I just thought people might be listening to this and they want to hear more from you, I'm sure. So thank you for sharing your story today, Gary.
Thank you,
yeah.
Pleasure.
That's Chief Inspector Gary Raymond, now retired, who worked on the Anita Cobby case. And that special fundraising dinner for Grace's Place is happening on Tuesday night at the Blacktown Workers Club. You can get in touch with the Blacktown Workers Club for more info.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 103.2's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.